last Christmas. We're going to continue the last of our kind of Advent mini-series this morning. We've looked at various characters from the Christmas story. So we've looked at Mary, we looked at the shepherds last week, and now we're going to look at the wise men, or magi, as the NIV calls them. And as Clive said, have you ever wondered what led these wise men to undertake their dangerous journey to Bethlehem? And this morning we'll simply look at what happened. Who were they and why did they come? And we'll look at what is Matthew's message? What does Matthew want us to understand? And then, you know, what is the message for us to hear this morning for Christmas? So what happened? Well, you all know the story pretty well. Nicola's read it to us. It's the only place that is recorded in the Bible. And so we'll just look at that passage together. And I'm not going to go through the whole story, but let's just have a look at a few of the characters that we see there. There's four kind of characters or groups of characters. We see Jesus in the story, obviously. We see the Magi. We see Herod, the king. And we see the chief priests or the religious leaders. So Jesus, of course, we have Jesus. We've looked at it. We've just had Christmas. Jesus was born in the stable in Bethlehem. And sorry to maybe break any images you might have of Christmas, but the wise men wouldn't have visited Jesus in the stable. The events that we read about in the passage in Matthew would not have been immediately after Jesus's birth. So some of the images you've seen there are probably not quite accurate. It probably would have been up to about 2 years later that the wise men visited Jesus. We know, and the passage tells us that that Jesus was in a house at this point, still in Bethlehem, but in a house. And we know in verse 7 that Herod had asked for some information from the wise men about when they saw the star. And then we'll see he tries to kill everyone under the age of 2. So we can safely assume that Jesus would have been under the age of 2, and it's more than likely he would have been a toddler. He would have been about 18 months old, maybe just starting to walk. So Jesus was a little toddler at this point. They were living in a house in Bethlehem. So that's the kind of what the age of Jesus would have been at this time. The other principal characters in the story are obviously the Magi. We are told that they came from the east, as Clive said earlier. And they've seen a star, and they want to know where the King of the Jews is. And they've come to worship the King of the Jews in verse 2. They go to Jerusalem, they see Herod. He would have been the obvious person to ask about, well, if there's this new king, well, where is he? Where's he going to be born? They seek out the religious leaders of the time who point him to Bethlehem. And they see Jesus in Bethlehem, and they're overjoyed to see him in verse 10. And they bow down to worship him. They give him treasures. They give him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And then they leave secretly in verse 12 because they've been warned in a dream not to go back to see Herod. And that's what the passage tells us about these Magi, these wise men. Then we have King Herod. He was Herod the Great, so a very well-known king of the time. And he was known for his big building projects that he had in Judea at that time. He expanded the temple in Jerusalem. He was known for his big building projects across the region. But he was also a very, very cruel king. He was guilty of many brutal acts against the Jewish people. He also killed one of his wives. He killed two of his own children. And so we see some of the cruelty that he is capable of, even in the passage that was read before us. He wants to kill all the children under the age of 2 in around Bethlehem at that time. Matthew tells us that he was disturbed in verse 3 when these Magi come to him. He tells us in verse 7 that he was curious. He calls the Magi secretly to come to him and tell him about what is happening. When does the star appear? We see in verse 16 he's furious that he's been outwitted by the Magi when he discovers that they've left him to go another way. And then we see this cruelty of this king, that he kills all the children under the age of 2 in Bethlehem and the surrounding area. You know, it could have been up to maybe about 20, 50 children that he killed during that, just looking for Jesus. And then we're told in verse 19 that he dies when Mary and Joseph, they escape with Jesus to Egypt, and then Herod dies at that time. Then the last group of people we see in the story are these religious leaders. In verses 4 and 5, these were the chief priests, these were the teachers of the law, and they would have been the religious experts of the day. And we see they were experts. When the Magi come and ask them, where is this king going to be born? They quite accurately tell him, they quote him from the Old Testament, they quote from Micah, and they tell him, well, they're going to be this king that is going to come, he's going to be born in Bethlehem. But they're so apathetic, these religious leaders, they don't even go the 5 or 6 miles to Bethlehem from Jerusalem to check it out. They have these men who have travelled thousands of miles because they understand that there is going to be a king born. They ask the religious leaders, well, in your history, you have someone who's going to be born a king. They say, yes, he'll be born in Bethlehem. And they don't bother going the 5 or 6 miles to see whether they are true. It is true. So these religious leaders, although they knew where the king was going to be born, they were apathetic. They didn't check it out. So they're the main characters in the story. Jesus, these Magi, the religious leaders, and King Herod. So let's have a little look about who then were these Magi. We're not told a great deal about them. And most of what we understand about the Magi come from traditions. They come from nativity plays, from Christmas carols. For example, you know, there were 3 of them. That they were kings. They had camels. Their names have been Melchior, Caspar, and Balthasar. They arrived when Jesus was in the stable, and the picture that we have that they were there with the shepherds. Unfortunately, none of that is actually supported from the text that we have and from the religious records that we have around that time. Matthew doesn't suggest that they were kings. He doesn't say there were 3 of them. He doesn't say that they were from the Orient. We 3 kings of from Orient are. So who were they? Who were these Magi? Well, actually, Magi is the root of our word magic. And so probably court astrologers would be the best way of describing them. Wise men as well would be a good way of describing them. We know that they did come from the east. Verse 1 tells us that. And they might have been Medes, or they might have been Persians, or Arabs, or possibly even Jews. And they probably served as court advisors. So they would have made forecasts, they would have made predictions for their royal patrons, and they would have studied the stars, and they would have been knowledgeable about the stars. They would have been specialists in things like the supernatural, in magic, in astrology, in divination. If you think back to the book of Daniel, if you remember, Daniel, after he interpreted Nebuchadnezzar's dreams, he was put in charge of this group of people, these magicians, the enchanters, the sorcerers. And after he had interpreted their dreams, and Nebuchadnezzar, he went to them, first of all, to understand what his dreams meant. And so these are who these Magi would have been, that type of people who would have been astrologers. And around that time, it would have been common from them to wander from kingdom to kingdom, from court to court, and to cover great distances in order to attend the birth or crowning of a king. They would have paid their respects. They would have offered gifts. In ancient literature, there's quite a lot of examples of magi visiting kings or emperors. For example, in AD 66, so after Jesus' birth, the king of Armenia led a procession of magi to pay homage to Nero in Rome. And also, Josephus, another historian of the time, records them visiting Herod earlier on in his reign. So it's not surprising that Herod would have taken their visitation as a very serious matter. And in verse 2 of the chapter we just read, the Magi asked Herod, "Where is the one who has been born, king of the Jews? We saw his star in the east, and we have come to worship him." They'd seen something so significant in the sky, as they were studying the stars, they'd seen something so significant that they made the long and dangerous journey of thousands of miles. It would have taken them months and months to come to Jerusalem to look for this new Jewish king. And so significant that they brought these costly gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh to give to this king. And they were such important individuals, they wouldn't have travelled alone. In fact, they probably travelled with quite a large entourage with them, maybe even some soldiers with them for protection. And so it's not surprising that Herod and the citizens of Jerusalem, they know they're there, and they're troubled and disturbed when they arrived. And it says in verse 3 that not only Herod was disturbed, but all of Jerusalem with him. So you can imagine the city. They all knew that this group of important people, their entourage, they were there in the city. And they knew why they would be there. Who is this king that is going to be born? And it wouldn't have been unusual for the readers of Matthew to know about these magi, to know that they had visited and why they would visit. So it wouldn't have been unusual, but it would have been something that wouldn't have gone unnoticed either. And in fact, such was their importance, it would have been one of Matthew's ways of showing that these are the top authorities of the time coming to validate the royal birth of Jesus, to validate his kingship. And they were very important and powerful people of their day. But in thinking about who they were, we mustn't forget that these were pagan. These were not religious believers coming to worship a god because they were brought up Jewish and this was to be the Messiah. These were pagan astrologers. These were not the kind of people that the religious leaders would have been fond of. Moses in the Old Testament, he clearly condemns the magic and things that they would have used in Deuteronomy. And the prophets, Isaiah and Jeremiah, they both judge those who dabble in the dark arts like these magi would have done. Later, we'll see that Peter will condemn in Acts someone named Simon who dabbled in magic. And Paul, he condemns someone who uses magic for the advance of the gospel. Yet these magi, these pagan sorcerers, these astrologers, they make the journey from the east to Palestine to worship and give gifts to the one they believed to be the king of the Jews. And what are they coming to do? They're coming to worship Jesus. These pagan astrologers are coming to worship Jesus. And we mustn't miss that. Amazingly, God is drawing these unbelieving magi to his son, Jesus. Even though the whole Bible, the Old Testament, the New Testament, condemns the kind of things that they did, condemns the astrology, condemns the dabbling in the dark arts, the magic that they would have done. Yet here they are, before Jesus, and they are worshipping him. In biblical terms, these people who are coming, these, however important, they're clearly marked as sinners. Yet God has led them there via a vocation that he hates. They have violated all God's laws, yet they have followed the star. He has led them to Jesus by a cruel king who killed his own sons, who killed baby boys. He has led them via apathetic religious leaders who, although they knew where the king would be born, they didn't bother going. And God has led these people, he has led them to Bethlehem. And here we have them before Jesus, worshipping Jesus. We mustn't forget who they are. These were pagan unbelievers. So what does Matthew want us to understand? Why is he kind of telling us all this? Well, take a look at verses 10 and 11. Have you noticed the way that Matthew portrays their visit to Jesus? You can't miss the fact that they were overjoyed. The American Standard puts it, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. On coming to the house, they saw the child with his mother Mary, and they bowed down and they worshipped him. Then they opened their treasures and presented him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Picture the scene, the joy that they have, the joy that Matthew records for us as they see this little toddler, maybe just standing up or starting to walk. Matthew piles on the joy language so that we don't miss it. They didn't just rejoice, but they rejoiced exceedingly. Here, our pagan, condemned astrologers rejoiced exceedingly with great joy when they saw this baby Jesus. But what does it mean that these astrologers worshipped this child? Did they know that this was God in the flesh? Were they worshipping him as God the Saviour? We don't really know. They may be merely paying homage to one whom they anticipate to be a great earthly king. They asked for the king of the Jews. They might have heard from exiled Jews the Balaam prophecy in Numbers chapter 24. A star shall come out of Jacob, and a scepter shall rise out of Israel. Or possibly via the prophecy of Daniel, who was some 600 years, as I said before, the chief of the magicians, some 600 years before. Perhaps this association with Daniel and with the early magi in Babylon helps to explain why these magi in our narrative, they expected a Jewish king to arrive in Judea. There's evidence that Daniel's prophecy was that there would be a Jewish powerful king was well known at the time. Josephus wrote about it. The Romans were aware of it. And we know they are clearly coming to see a king. But it seems more that is going on here. They're not just coming to visit a king. They have come to worship him, even though this is a king who is just a toddler. And he's not in kingly surroundings. He is in a house in a small town of Bethlehem. In verse 11, Matthew wants us to know they didn't just bow down before the king, which would have been the normal thing to do before a king. But they worshipped him as well. It wasn't just their physical posture of bowing down, but what is going on in their hearts. And we don't know whether they knew it or not, but this newborn king would reign not only over Israel, but over the whole world. And at least in some sense, they are worshipping better than they know. And Matthew wants us to see that. And by telling us they brought gifts, it provides an important connection between these pagan astrologers and a prophecy from Isaiah, which hundreds of years ago, Isaiah prophesied about a nation, about nations coming to Israel's king in chapter 60, telling of the Messiah to come. He says, "Lift up your eyes and look about you. The wealth of the seas will be brought to you. The riches of the nations will come. And all of Sheba will come, bearing gold, incense, and proclaiming the praise of the Lord." And Matthew wants us to see this connection between what Isaiah had prophesied years before and what is happening here. And these pagan astrologers are offering their gifts. They're worshipping not only the King of Israel, but the one who will be the King of Kings. And in Matthew's book, in chapter 1, he's already told us of the virgin conception, and that this baby will be Emmanuel. It will be God with us. And he will save his people from their sins in chapter 1. And in this gospel, Matthew will unfold the amazing story of how this child, who was born a king, will walk an excruciating path through his life here on earth to ultimately to die on a cross. How he will suffer, how he will be rejected, how he will die a horrible death, a sacrificial death on a Roman cross on the way to glory. And Matthew will unfold this in his book. And Matthew wants these readers to know that they have come, these magi have come, and they have come to worship his king. Isaiah had predicted that they would come, and Matthew wants them to know that they have brought the best of they have, the gold, frankincense, and myrrh. This myrrh that will be associated with the death of Jesus, some 33 years after these magi have visited him. And these magi, when they come to Jerusalem, they were asking, where is he who has been born King of the Jews? Little would they know that that would be the very title that would be written above Jesus' head as he was dying on the cross. King of the Jews. And Matthew will tell us that in chapter 27. So the Magi come, they're asking for the King of Jews. Little would they know that 30-odd years later, that would be the exact title that Jesus would have above his head as he is hanging there on the cross. And Matthew wants us to see the contrast between this king who was born and the Magi worship, and the domineering king like Herod, abusing his power, acting impulsively, killing those who get in his way. Rather, this is the one true king, the one who came not to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many, in Matthew chapter 20. And this King Jesus, he doesn't merely demand our worship and adoration, but he wins it through his amazing self-giving on our behalf, all the way to death on the cross. He is the King who demonstrates his love for us, that while there were still sinners, he dies for us. And that is what Matthew wants us to see, that this little toddler, Jesus, is more than a baby. He is a king. And that these pagan astrologers have come to worship him. And Matthew will then go on in his book to expand how amazing this king is. And so, just conclusion, let me just bring out a couple of points for you to ponder on, to think about this week. As I said, these were sinners who came to worship Jesus. And don't miss that message. If such sinners as these, condemned by the Bible, can approach the Christ, Jesus Christ, and fall down in worship, so may everyone. And so may you. These pagan astrologers, they fall down in adoration and worship. They're a stunning emblem announcing that all sinners may come to Jesus. And we as believers here this morning, we should be aware of having a narrow vision of who can come to Jesus. We can be so prone to write off people like this, who the Bible clearly condemns, but God doesn't. He draws them. He woos them to himself by the most amazing circumstances, right to the house in Bethlehem. And today, God is still seeking worshippers from the pagan religions of this world. The chief priests of the Jewish religious leaders, they weren't interested, they didn't want to know. It wasn't the squeaky clean, it wasn't the religious elite who bowed the knee to worship Jesus. Rather, they ignored the signs. It was a dirty pagan who streamed in to adore Jesus. Tony told us last week about the shepherds coming in, the lowest of society at the time. And they were the ones who were there rejoicing. They are the ones who the angels came to. They were the ones who visited Jesus. And here we have it, some 18 months later. A different class of people, but nevertheless still sinners, coming here to worship the newborn king. On this side of the cross, you know, we have the Bible before us. We know so much more than what the Magi would have known. And we know that this God graciously draws sinners. And amazingly, he enabled us to come to his Son. And he provides eternal salvation for those who come to him. So sinners are invited to come and to worship Jesus. And so secondly, our reaction should be the same as what these Magi did. It should be one of worship and adoration, adoring Jesus. On Christmas time, this Christmas time is not just about acknowledging Jesus, but adoring him. And I know I'm guilty of this, but often we think of Christmas as a fantastic opportunity to witness to others. And that's true, of course it is. It's a fantastic opportunity to bring people into our church. But our primary reaction as believers should be one of worship. Coming before Jesus, we should worship and adore him. And have you lost some of that wonder and awe of coming before an almighty king? Coming before almighty King Jesus. What would be your reaction if Jesus walked through this door this morning? If you're a believer here this morning, you know so much more than these Magi knew. Their worship would have been hazy at very best. They came before him as a toddler. But we have the whole of his life recorded for us in the Bible. We know he is marvelously merciful. Through him, the grace of God has come. And he offers salvation to all people. Titus chapter 2. We know he came to seek and to save the lost. Luke chapter 19. We know he came to heal the sick and call the sinners. We know he came to serve and give his life as a ransom for many, for to heal the spiritually broken, Mark chapter 10. We know he came to destroy the works of the devil, 1 John chapter 3. We know he came to him who accepts sinners just as ourselves, Matthew chapter 11. And if you're a believer here this morning, because we know these things, we can be joyful and we can be triumphant at this Christmas time. All these things can be for you personally. And we adore Christ, the Lord, with joy. And we rejoice exceedingly with great joy. That should be our spirit at this Christmas time, is to come and to worship Jesus for who he is and all that he has done. And we should have no less joy than these Magi, rejoicing exceedingly with great joy. And so let's come now as we finish our service together. Let's come and let's sing together. Let's adore our Saviour together. And let's sing, O Come, All Ye Faithful, a well-known song. It's number 13 in the hymn sheet or the carol sheet. O come, let us adore him. O come, let us adore him. O come, let us adore him, Christ.